Gail Harris in for Dick Gordon. This is The Connection. Anyone who thought African-American studies programs sprang full-blown out of the student ferment of the 60s might be surprised to discover their deep roots in what were then Negro colleges around the turn of the century. The early scholars in this field often faced criticism and suspicion about the value and purpose of their work. And so, when Harvard University President Larry Summers had a little talk with Cornel West, one of the superstars of the African-American Studies Department, about hip-hop and grade inflation, perhaps West heard echoes of that earlier skepticism. At any rate, he took it as a sign of disrespect. And off he went in a huff to Princeton. Another professor followed, and a third publicly thought about it. Now, a little more than a year later, Harvard has reorganized, hired new faculty, and merged its African studies with its African American studies, deciding that the new intellectual trend toward studying the diaspora may be the way to go. Connection listeners, how does studying the movement of millions of people from Africa change notions of African and American identity? As society becomes more mixed, more fully integrated, is it still important to make those distinctions? Our number is 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. And we're joined by Marcelina Morgan this hour, who has already installed her hip-hop archives at Harvard from her previous posting at the University of California at Los Angeles. Hi, Marcelina.
Hello.
And Evelyn Hammond, who studies race and the history of science and is joining the department at Harvard from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Hi, Evelyn.
Good morning.
First, though, we want to hear from Gerald Early, a professor of English and African American Studies at Washington University in St. Louis, who has written at length about the dilemma faced by some black scholars in their effort to widen the debate, change how people think, and how they're taught. Hi, Gerald.
Good morning.
And by the way, I should also note, Connection listeners, that everyone on this program but me has a PhD, so we're just going to go with first names, if that's all right. So, Gerald, let me start with you. What is the significance of Harvard merging these two departments?
Well, I think it's a reflection of a trend that's going on in the field, especially among younger scholars coming in who are interested in diasporic studies or interested in comparative work dealing with African descended people from around the world and trying to and developing scholarship along those lines.
And can you explain for us what the African diaspora is?
Well, the African diaspora would be defined as those areas of the world where African descended people exists in significant number to have an articulated culture and political view. So we're talking about areas of the world such as the Caribbean, parts of Latin America, the United States, and of course the continent of Africa itself.
Make those connections.
Hmm?
So these studies make those connections
these
between all these various areas.
It's become, quite an energetic intellectual movement. But, you know, it should also be said that when African-American studies at the White University first began in the very late 1960s and early 1970s, you did have things called Africana programs, which in some way were interested in trying to do the same sort of thing of a merger of African and African-American studies, because these fields have very distinct histories and often very distinct people in these fields. And in some ways, to have the merger that's going on now, it seems to me, is an attempt to redefine both African-American studies and African studies.
And do you think that other universities will follow this if they haven't done it already?
Oh, yes, I think so, especially for other universities where they're hiring younger scholars who deal with this because I think, has really become a real driving intellectual force in this field.
And in terms of the flap that we mentioned between Larry Summers and the discipline of African-American studies, who won?
I don't really know if anyone won. I mean, if it's a matter of you have two people who are talking to two rather distinct audiences. Mr. Sommer is talking to a particular audience, donors, alumni of Harvard, you know, a whole range of people that he wants to, and he wants to say something to those people. And as much as he's a public figure, he wants to say something to the general public because Harvard is an institution that has tremendous public persona and public resonance. And as much as he may have a battle with one of his black scholars, he also wants to, you know, come around on the other hand and say, I'm all for affirmative action, as he recently wrote in supporting the Michigan case, or that they're hiring fine black scholars for the Department of African American Studies at Harvard, that he is supportive of this and feels this is an important trend in scholarship. It's important to continue to support this program. So I think, you know, it's sending a certain kind of message, and perhaps a message from his vantage point that, you know, serves a number of ends for the Mr. West and the people in the program. You know, they made certain kind of statements and they asserted what they wanted to assert, part of which I think had to do with the principles upon which they feel African American studies programs must be run, and the kind of principles they must fulfill in order to be what they should be. Because I think people in African American studies, and certainly from its beginning when it first started, didn't see these programs in quite the same way that, you know, other disciplines saw themselves, and I think they saw themselves in a kind of oppositional sort of way. And I think Mr. West wanted very much, and other scholars like him, that this oppositional mode of African American studies must be maintained.
I'd like to ask you to go back for just a moment to this notion of studying the diaspora, because we're asking our listeners to reflect on the value and the fact that that seems to be the new intellectual trend, as you pointed out. How would you define its value? What does this tell us that we didn't know before? What kind of questions are going to be asked now that perhaps were not asked in quite the same way before?
Well, I think you're going to, I think in the past, what people might have been interested in was looking at African descended people, let's say, in the United States, and seeing what sort of things that they had that made them African, or African traits or African cultural traits or things like this. I think the questions now, and at that point when the scholarship was engaged in that, that was perfectly fine. I think now, I think issues have become much more, a little bit more sophisticated than just looking at, okay, what kind of African traits still obtain in, you know, cultural expressions in Caribbean or cultural expressions in the United States, and rather looking at complex questions about, more nuanced questions about the nature of slavery, the nature of what Africans, how they were able to exert a certain kind of presence both culturally and politically as a people under the institution of slavery, or the dynamics, international dynamics of relationships between Africans and African Americans and other people that hadn't really been talked about very much before, in so far as, let's say, for instance, Booker T. Washington and his experience, his relationship with Togo, and is trying to establish a kind of Tuskegee there, and the principles behind that, and looking more at long-standing relationships that have taken place among African descended people around the world and the significance of those relationships, in more than just talking about how, you know, African Americans, how people who are outside of Africa still remain African. I think there are questions now that are going beyond that.
All right, Gerald, we'll stay with us for just a moment. I want to pose the same question to our other two guests. Evelyn, perhaps I can start with you. How do you define the value of this new field of inquiry, or perhaps it's not that new?
Well, I do think it's relatively new, and I think the value, as Gerald said, has to do with the more sophisticated levels of questions, the more complex kinds of historical interactions we are now able to document using, you know, innovative and new kinds of sources. I guess an example I would give is, for example, a study of the introduction of rice production in South Carolina. We now know that Africans who came to the South Carolinas as slaves contributed significantly to the development of all the technologies involved in rice production. And so we see now, I mean, that part of the history, certainly when I was studying African American history many years ago in school, was something that, you know, was not talked about, was not discussed. I mean, the sense was that these Africans were brought here as slaves, made no contributions whatsoever, and were simply brute labor. And now we know that that's simply not the case. And that, just moving from, you know, something like an agricultural and technological innovation to the arena of politics, to arena of creative arts and all of those, I think we're learning much more about this sort of deep interconnections between the kind of social and political dynamics that resulted because of the presence of African descended peoples in the New World.
And Marcelina, from your perspective.
I come at this from both the perspective of a linguist and doing the work on the hip-hop archive, so I'm looking at it in terms of language and culture. But if you think back, I mean, there was a time when we would say that in terms of African-American English, there's no relationship between that and anything that ever happened in Africa, and that when slaves came to the U.S., they lost their language, they lost their culture, it was seen as this clean slate sort of situation, when in fact that's never been the human experience anyway. Being able to go and really do an analysis to look at what languages in Africa actually look like, what discourse in Africa is like, what the relationship is between discourse practices, and as many of the linguistic aspects that one can trace. It's very difficult to do that. But also, as historians began to look at documents and as linguists began to examine the same documents, and any sort of material that still remain, we begin to see that it isn't the case that there's no sense of Africa in African American culture, but it really is a case that we needed much more work to be done and more sophisticated methods to be used in understandings of the world, cultures, and ideologies. So there's been a great movement and development in all these areas.
All right, we're going to continue that conversation in a moment. Gerald, I know we're about to lose you, so I just want to throw one more question your way. Do you see a time when these studies will be less necessary as society becomes more mixed, more integrated, or would you make the argument that they will always be needed?
Well, I think the study of African-descended people will always be needed, but it will not always be the same. That's because audiences change over time, generations change, and what they need and what they feel they need to know will change. The kind of work that we're doing now is necessary for this particular time we're living in and for what people feel they need to know about themselves and what they want to uncover and feel they need to tell the world. That will change, and my children's children may still have an interest in African descended people, who they are and what they are, but how they want to know that will probably be rather different than how people want to know it now.
Well, we thank you so much for joining us, Gerald Early.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. Gerald Early is professor of English and of African and Afro-American Studies at Washington University in St. Louis. Connection listeners, we're going to continue the conversation and pose this question to you. What is the purpose and place of ethnic studies in America today? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK.
Old pirates, yes, they rabbi, sold I to the merchant ships. Minutes after they took I.
I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. We're talking this hour about African American studies and their tendency to lean toward the diaspora these days. With me are Evelyn Hammonds and Marcelina Morgan from the African and African American Studies Department in Harvard. And Marcelina, you were mentioning a moment ago about some of the linguistic challenges, and it reminded me of something that I read, that there are something like 2,000 languages in Africa. More than that, right? 2,039, some number along that way. It was stunning.
Yes. Well, you know, Africa is an enormous continent. And fortunately for linguists, we think of it in terms of language families. So at least we believe there, it's possible to get a handle on what's going on. But it's an incredibly diverse continent. And many of the people in Africa are multilingual or at least bilingual. And so it's while there are many languages, people are able to communicate with, neighboring kinds of groups. So.
And also your work involves not just language, but language set to music. And we've got an example of that. We want to hear a bit from Fela Kuti, who is a Nigerian musician. Tell us a bit about him first.
Fela Kuti is, I think, a very important musician, especially if you look at hip-hop, in that his music is played throughout, I think, the underground hip-hop community. And by that, I mean places where youth are practicing their skills and looking for different beats and different sounds. And they've come to really learn a lot about him. His son is very popular among a number of artists. And his music is music that combines, it's great dance music. It also has very often a political and cultural message. And Fela Kuti died of AIDS and was public about that and helped talk a lot about AIDS education. And that also had an effect eventually on the hip-hop community. I think the influence is amazing in that it served as a model in terms of course, sampling various aspects of music, but also how to combine politics and art and music in a way that you're still dealing with the pleasure of music and dance and not the preaching, heavy-handed aspect of it.
All right.
I think Fela Kuti is a great example.
Well, let's hear some of it. And as you say, he was the inspiration for a lot of other musicians. We also have a piece called Time Travelin' by a hip-hop artist called Common. Let's hear some of that.
Yeah, I was a piano player in my last lifetime. Now I write rhymes, sit right line, and let my light shine. Out of dark space, with the world on my mind like Scarface. Over sex drive is like a car chase. More than a car, it's the piece of my heart chase. Stakes are high, like my uncle is. We both got problems, he never confronted his. Under the bridge, I wrote some shit.
Marcelina, even for someone who's never heard either of these folks, you can hear a connection. You know, there's clearly that Afro beat there.
Exactly.
But what other connections are there?
Well, there are many connections, but we can't underestimate that beat because that beat has such a symbol. I mean, it means so much, I think, to people who are involved in African music and African diaspora music, but also the whole concept of the drum, you know, with the message and telling the truth, and that you're moving to the drum and you're listening to the drum and you're communicating across oceans and villages and cities to get at what everyone is basically searching for in at this particular moment, especially in hip hop, and what they're picking up from Africa, and that's the truth, and how to actually deal in this world in a way where you're dealing with humanity. And in this particular case, the focus is also on the idea of loss and struggle, because it is about something like AIDS and HIV and health and how one survives. And so even in the lyrics themselves aren't talking about that directly, but they're talking about what it means to have a purpose, have focus, grow up in a situation and try to borrow from as much as you can, even if things aren't perfect, to keep growing and going forward.
All right, Evelyn, now help us connect the dots between Marcelina's work and your work. I assume there must be some.
Yes, well, she said, I mean, a good connection in one sense is that she noted that Fela Kuti died of HIV and he had become an outspoken activist in support of AIDS prevention. And, I mean, I look at it in terms of the health experience of African Americans has always been characterized in terms of it's the relationship of African Americans to Africa. And so the disease experience of Africans has always been connected. So you think about the in the early colonial period when it was recognized that African the slaves seemed to be less susceptible to malaria. And that had something to do with where they came from and what their disease experience had been in Africa. And so there are always these sort of looking back to try to understand the disease experience of African Americans through looking at Africa as the origin of African Americans. And so I think AIDS, though, illuminates the complexities of making such comparisons. AIDS has been quite prevalent among African Americans in the United States, but of course, being located in the United States, they've had the benefit of being an advanced Western nation. And though there are many, many barriers to treatment, they're not the same kind of barriers being faced in Africa. But then one can look more deeply at the sort of cultural reactions to the scourge of HIV and begin to wonder, or ask questions about the role of religion, the role of family, the role of just deeply held and deeply felt ideas about sickness and health that may, again, one can look comparatively to say, there are ways in which people have maintained certain beliefs, especially in the face of devastating disease. And then on the other hand, I mean, some of us who try to analyze these things were quite struck at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic more than 20 years ago now, when people made gross and inaccurate comparisons between the HIV in African Americans and what was happening in Africa. And so, it took a great deal of work and analysis for people to stop making assertions about improper sexual activities with animals and all kinds of things. In other words, the sort of a kind of deviant notion of a sort of deviant practices was something that was prevalent in commentary both about Africans and HIV and also about African Americans and HIV.
We have a lot of listeners who want to get in on this conversation. Let's go first to Boston, Massachusetts, and hear from Desiree. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for having me on The Connection. My comment is just that there's a big difference between the study of Africa and the study of African Americans. And by combining the two into one department, are we going to acknowledge that, say, the study of ritual and religion in Africa, that we would be specifically focusing on how that affected or how that affects African Americans? Like, say, French studies, for example. If you had, you might have French studies, but then if you were studying French Americans, it would be something totally different. So I just would like to know how we would be separating that. Like, would there still be a separate department for African studies or just this new African/African-American studies department?
Well, Desiree, why don't you stay on the line for a moment? Because, Evelyn, you were shaking your head no.
Well, I think that there's a tension there, and I think many people would have suggested that perhaps the focus on African studies in an African-American studies department would be only on the role of African or Africa in the Afro-American experience. Now, I think that is certainly not my intent. I mean, I think Africa is a huge continent, absolutely complex, histories that are, in some respects, have something to do with the African-American experience, and in other ways have nothing to do with the African-American experience, and there are intellectual questions about Africa on its own terms that have to be asked, and it has to be studied rigorously. And so I don't think that there's any attempt here to talk about subsuming African studies under African-American studies by any means. But certainly a deep and complicated knowledge of Africa is important to understand the African-American experience in the diaspora. Right. And I think that's the point that we want to make.
Desiree, do you think?
Well, that's good. I think that that's something that could definitely enhance the experience of African-American studies, the history of where this whole group of people came from. So I think it's important and a good move in the right direction, just so that, the two separate disciplines aren't combined and then that's it. That's it. But as far as, adding spice to one by adding African studies to African American studies, I think that's good.
Okay, Desiree, thank you so much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go to Charleston, South Carolina now and hear from Steve. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you?
Good, although your phone line isn't great. We'll try to hear you. Go ahead.
I'm sorry, I'm on the road. I was listening to the program, and my concern is, or question, deals with ethnic studies programs in general and the African and African-American studies program in specific. And my question is, by emphasizing the study of such programs, aren't we perhaps moving in the wrong direction, looking backwards instead of forwards, when in fact I think that perhaps the goal ought to be to remove the emphasis on any sort of hyphen, as an American would describe him or herself, and look at ways to bring everyone into the mainstream of American culture, as opposed to programs that might perpetuate the self-exclusion that seems to be going on in society these days.
Okay, Steve, we take your point. Let's hear what Marcelina has to say about that. Is it exclusions in the university that lead to continuing exclusions and separation in society?
Well, I think it's important to understand that from our perspective, African-American studies is very much inclusive in American society. So it doesn't, African-Americans are Americans, and we, our existence and the study of African-Americans in no way separates us out as Americans. It's like any other discipline. When we're talking about focusing on a particular area that we're studying and looking at, and there's research and development in that area. So it isn't the sort of thing that is divisive unless people choose to look at it as not American. And I think very often when people make that argument, they're not seeing African-Americans as inclusive of American citizens. I think when we talk about both African and African-American studies, it is within a department. And we are talking about faculty who have research interests, research directions, and those research interests and directions sometimes merge and sometimes are on particular areas. I mean, I work on African-American language and discourse practices. I also work with the English-speaking African diaspora. Now, in order for me to do that, I work in the Caribbean. I looked at London and Jamaica and the relationship between migration and transmigration with women. And I looked at Chicago and Mississippi. And I thought, as I was looking at Chicago and Mississippi, that it would be interesting to see what happens in terms of London and Jamaica, because there was a similar kind of migration that the two had. At the same time, I know that the transmigration between London and Jamaica is a different kind of situation. Africa is very present in that situation, and not necessarily in the U.S. And so it's complicated, but it's the area that I do. It's an area that I work in, and that's what happens in a department.
And what about that, Evelyn? I want to give you a chance to weigh in on this, because it's not an uncommon criticism.
No, it's not an uncommon criticism. But I reject it in part because I think for many people that maybe they don't really know a lot about what we actually teach in our courses. And secondly, I reject this notion of perpetuating something called self-exclusion. I think there are structures and institutions and forces that are perpetuating the exclusion of certain aspects of African-American life from the mainstream of academic inquiry. But, for example, I would say in an African-American history course that I teach on race and science, I teach the history of American science. I teach Thomas Jefferson's Notes on the State of Virginia. I can't teach that without talking about American political history and Thomas Jefferson's role in it. So in what sense is my teaching about African-Americans and his perception of African-Americans in that very famous treatise exclusionary? Okay, and ultimately, by looking at what he has to say about the African presence in the Americas at that particular point, one learns a lot about his interactions with European intellectuals, and also what his vision is for the American polity at that point. So, from my perspective, African American history has never been an exclusive kind of inquiry. It is all encompassing of American history, and certainly my sense is that I'd be happy to have American historians use African-American history as a focus to teach American history more broadly. And that, to me, would have been would be an achievement that would end what I think some people perceive as certain kinds of exclusions.
And what about the faces in your classrooms? Are they all African-Americans, or do you have a real mixture of all cultures?
Not at all. I mean, I would say the majority are not African-Americans.
I'm sorry, how many?
The majority are not African-Americans in the classroom. No.
Really? That might be surprising to some people.
Exactly.
Well, it's a different generation, you know. I mean, I think a lot of young people are interested in sort of writing certain aspects of their education because they may have felt as though they didn't get the wide range of the full American experience in their education. And they're also very interested in making sure that they're going to be able to, you know, work and provide all leadership and make a contribution to a very diverse world, and they want to be very much a part of that. And they don't really see that world as one particular group. And so you get just virtually, you know, everyone is represented, but the majority of the students in the class are my classes are non-African American.
And Evelyn, do you see a big difference in what you teach and the way you teach and the other courses in the African American Studies Department from, let's say, the European Studies Department or the Latino Studies Department?
Well, I can't speak to those, but I have a joint appointment in the Department of the History of Science. So, as I said, the courses that I teach that are about race and science are courses that have an enormous amount of scientific content as well as information about how issues of race and also gender have shaped the construction of scientific communities. And so in my mind, it is an integrative effort. It is not one that is about producing exclusions.
Connection listeners, we're going to continue the conversation on the point of, as society becomes more mixed and integrated, is it still important to have special departments for African American studies? We invite you to join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Gail Harris. This is The Connection from NPR.
Don't you know that we just stopped the But I smell gunpowder, Zaire's gunpowder, LA's gunpowder. I wanna know why.
I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. And we're talking this hour about the future of African-American studies, as well as their present value this hour. With me are Marcelina Morgan, linguistic anthropologist, and Evelyn Hammonds, a science historian. Both have recently joined the African and African-American Studies Department in Harvard. And you can join our conversation at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. We'd love to hear from you. Let's hear from Carlton right now, who's calling in from Durham, North Carolina. Hello, Carlton. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you. Yes, my concern is that I think it is extremely important that we continue to have and further develop African-American studies programs. I think it's very crucial that even here in the United States that although society supposedly is becoming more mixed or multicultural, that for issues of identity, we have to still emphasize African-American studies along with other types of ethnic studies. In addition, and perhaps more importantly, I think it's significant to develop programs in the African diaspora because that brings to us the global dimensions of the black experience. I think it's crucial to study the African presence in Europe or the African presence in the Caribbean and for people to be able to understand the complex connections and not just from an American perspective. We have to understand the position of the Afro-Caribbean in Europe, in London or in Liverpool or in Paris. I think these are growing issues today as we consider the black presence throughout throughout the world.
Carlton, it sounds as if you really know what you're talking about. Do you teach this subject? And I'm wondering why you think this is important if you don't.
I do teach it
gotcha.
To a certain degree. Here at the university, we have developed courses on the black presence in Europe, the black presence in Latin America, in some African diaspora courses, and they are rather popular among our students. We're just concerned that we hope that we develop a better conceptualization of it. For several years, we have been trying to conceptualize it properly, and some of us think that we have not yet reached that point.
All right, Carlton. Mm-hmm. We appreciate the point. Thanks for being with us. In fact, stay on the line for a moment, because, Evelyn, that was something of an issue for you, was it not, that you were able to move into a department where it wasn't just you doing this work. There was a whole community of scholars to be able to explore this more fully. And I would think that would make your work even more interesting and enriched.
It enriches my work enormously. I think that... I agree with Carlton, though, that we are in the process of really trying to theorize the African presence in the world. And I think trying to make these connections and have some more sophisticated analytic categories to try to understand how they might be similar, the African presence in Liverpool versus the African presence in New York at various historical moments and around the world. And so I think that we are in an exciting moment where we're trying to think hard about how you explain how the African presence has shaped particular specific geographical and political contexts and what it means when you look at it in a broader way. Is there something similar about what's happened in different places? Is there something different, and how do we talk about it? And so it's exciting for me because, of course, one always wants to be in a scholarly community where your ideas are welcomed and where there's a lot of pushback, and so you feel that you grow.
Well, exactly so. But even once you step off campus, Marcelina, I mean, how important is this that it become part of a broader discussion, not just inside the classroom?
I think it's absolutely important. I appreciate both Carlton and Evelyn's comments. If you think about it, you know, we're talking about a time now where we're living our day-to-day lives are much more complex than they were 3 years ago. And it is very important that we begin at universities to start organizing ourselves so that we can actually deal with these level of complexities and do the work necessary and provide the scholarship and research that actually supports what's going on in the world and helps us understand it. If you take just for something that on the one hand may seem not related to us, like the European Union, for example, well, the European Union coming together in many respects had also affected whether or not people of African descent in European countries identified themselves as African, of African descent, as Portuguese or not. In a country like Portugal, a number of people of African descent who may have been mixed with Portuguese or not had to make a decision, or the government made a decision, and they suddenly became Africans. And so the level of complexity that may have existed or the social organization completely changed for them. That kind of activity helps us have a much more textured understanding of issues like race, culture, identity, nation, nationalism, and certainly has affected our work here. So it's a world that we're living in, and we're talking to people day to day, and beginning to understand that we can't have the same expectations that everyone is just like us, and things. I think you know, it's this sort of structure, departments like these, that really help us move into the world that we actually have.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's hear from another listener now. We're going to Cambridge, Massachusetts, and hear from Jason. Hi, Jason.
Hi. When I hear about studies like this, and there's a professor of hip-hop at Harvard, it just makes me wonder what is education? I mean, how is education being understood now?
You're saying that hip-hop is not a worthy line of inquiry for a college student?
I didn't say that. I just
I know, I'm pushing you on it.
So what are you saying, Jason?
It makes me wonder, what's the end of it? What's the purpose of it? How is this education?
Well, I mean, first of all, that people refer to me as professor of hip-hop, you know, I have absolutely no control over that designation. But I'm, you know, I accept it. It's fine. When I do work in hip-hop underground settings, they call me professor no matter what I say. I want them to call me. So I understand that is who I am, and I am very interested in hip-hop culture. But when we talk about hip-hop, we're not talking about, you know, some popular song or the videos that may be shown on MTV, though that's part of what we're talking about. We're really talking about some of the cultural, political, social movements and ideas that have come out and as a result of hip-hop, and that tend to be organized around the whole notion of hip-hop, because at the heart of hip-hop is what is called the cipher, and that is the place where people are practicing and critiquing. And because there's so much critiquing going on, and that critique involves a tremendous amount of knowledge and study, it has incredible potential. And the only reason why hip-hop exists worldwide is because of that. So if you go listen to hip-hop in Africa, 100% of the hip-hop in Africa is political. It is there are women rappers in Africa that are dealing with HIV and family health and all that. The UN insists that any organization that deals with youth throughout the world has to have some sort of hip-hop influence, because that is the way youth are getting information and are being educated. So I think it's important that we at a university figure out how to actually begin to talk about this and understand it, because it's something that turns out to be very important. You can see it's my passion. I apologize.
So, Jason, you ready to sign up for the course?
No, not yet. Not quite yet.
All right. Well, thank you very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go now to Nectar, Alabama, and hear from Randy. Hello, Randy.
Hi. I appreciate the conversation very much. I think this is really America's question. What I'd like to do, I'm a Native American, and I've taught ethnic studies, and I've written on diversity and things. And I guess what I'd like to do is get some response from the guest today about one thing I just want to throw a plug in real quick and ask if they're dealing with also the Native American, African American question in their studies. But secondly, more importantly, I want to ask you had a caller several times back who mentioned that aren't we going backwards if we leave the hyphen in our, you know, Native American, African American, and I couldn't agree or disagree more.
Randy, hold on. Let me stop you here, because the America's question, what is America's question? Diversity? Studying all ethnic groups?
Our multi-ethnic relationship to one another is exactly what makes America, I believe. So I guess to answer that or to ask that question is I would like to see all of America come to embrace African American studies, Native American studies, Asian American studies, etc., as their history,
okay,
and
Randy,
part of their history, and I want to get their guest response to that.
All right.
Because until they do, it just becomes that's those people studying about themselves.
Okay, Randy, we take your point. Mm-hmm. Evelyn?
Mm-hmm. No, I don't disagree with the caller. I think that, you know, America's history is a multi-ethnic history. And I think our goal is to, these area studies emerged because there needed to be a specific focus to move this scholarship forward. And I think that was a necessary first kind of step. I think now we've reached a point where we can try to bring all these different strands together. If I were to try to explain my own history, I have to try to explain the presence of Native Americans in Georgia, the presence of Africans in Georgia, and the presence of Europeans in Georgia. And that would be the true way to try to explain my ancestry and my people's history in Georgia. So, I mean, if you're trying to tell the story in a way as it unfold. And that has all kinds of, that has all kinds of cultural and political ramifications for a family's sense of identity, but also the politics that played out in the state of Georgia when all these different groups came together. So I think we know this. I think our goal is to make everyone more aware of it. I think in terms of our work coming, having impact inside and outside of the academy, our students look around and see a much more diverse world than we saw when we went to school. Okay, they don't necessarily know how to think about the diversity that they see. And I think in programs like ours, one of the things we try to do is to get people to think hard about the formation of identity, privilege, power, history, ancestry, cultural formations, and what they do and what they bring to our understanding of ourselves and our world. And I think I think people tend to believe that that is sort of feel good studies, or it's just about us, or those kinds of statements are made. And I would say it's manifestly not that. It is, diversity is complex, and it takes very serious work, a development of good tools to understand its multiple and multifarious meanings.
Does that mean, though, Marceline, in the couple minutes we have left, that this work is going to need to continue forever, or at some point, or are we going to be able to say, we get it? As a society, we're interested in all of these questions, and we are dealing with all of these questions together.
You know, I agree with Gerald early when he spoke earlier, in that I don't imagine, I mean, I have more faith in all of us than to think it's necessary to have this kind of focus forever. But I think when you're focused in a department, you end up developing an area, you end up really moving research forward, and you have to do it that way. I can remember when I was a student in school, when we were talking, it was a linguistic class, and the example that they gave for me was about race. This was in the late 70s, early 80s. I was just an undergraduate. Now when I use this example, I'm going to just say it very quickly. It's Americans are still prejudiced against blacks. I say it in front of class, and the class will nod their head and say, that's true. And then I say, Americans still make less money than whites. And they say, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. And I say, yes, because we have a problem. Okay, I am an American. And I think that that is still what goes on, and we can wish it weren't true, but it is true. And so concentrating our work this way, having a department, becomes a very important thing in understanding what's happening in this country, Africa, African American, and the world. I think it's the future.
That's
what we're dealing with.
Fascinating discussion. We thank you both so much for being with us. Marcelina Morgan is a linguistic anthropologist. Thanks again.
It's a mouthful.
It is a mouthful. And Evelyn Hammonds is a science historian. Thank you, Evelyn.
Thank you.
Both are at the African and African American Studies Department at Harvard University. And earlier we heard from Professor Gerald Early, Professor of English and Afro-American Studies at Washington University in St. Louis. Connection listeners, you can continue the conversation online by going to the forum section of our website, theconnection.org. Our senior producer is Tara Murphy. I'm Gail Harris, and for Dick Gordon, this is The Connection. If we live in their revelation, why should the people of the sun have to run? Talk to Esau, and again, he'll have freedom. He asked why I hadn't been to see him. Really, I ain't have a good reason. He said, if I give